Hey there, and welcome to Cyberpunk Librarian. I'm Daniel Messer. The cloud has become a buzzword that went full circle. First it was a concept, then it was a buzzword, then it was a thing people got tired of hearing about, then all people wanted to hear about was how the cloud could help them, and suddenly it became a concept again. When most people say the cloud, what they're really talking about is storage. There are plenty of other things you can do in the cloud for sure. There's cloud computing like Microsoft Azure. There's distributed processing, kind of like the Folding at Home project to simulate protein folding for biological research. Or SETI at home to search for extraterrestrial life. Cloud computing has a lot of uses, but when you hear it used in the press, much of the time they seem to be talking about storing your stuff in the cloud. There's so many of these things, though. Amazon, Box, Dropbox, Google Drive, OneDrive, OwnCloud, SpiderOak, and more. Most have a free option with a limited amount of storage, or you can, of course, pay for more storage, and then you can upload your stuff. But is that all you can do with it? This is Cyberpunk Librarian, episode 33, Feet on the Ground, Head in the Clouds. My name is Daniel Messer, your friendly neighborhood Cyberpunk Librarian, welcoming you back to the show that explores the intersection of libraries and technology and is all about living that high-tech, low-budget lifestyle. So hello, hello everyone. Cyberpunk Librarian is back on the air, broadcasting a frequency of 2400 megahertz, and it's great to be back here in the studio with a mic in my face and a monitor on the desk telling me that I'm recording something for you. And hey, we are going to talk about the cloud on today's episode, but there's a twist, and it's kind of ironic that we're doing this, or maybe not ironic, that word gets so misused, but it's certainly coincidental that it's been raining cats and dogs here in Arizona the last 24 hours or so. Yes, I know that's weird, but we do get rain in the desert, and when it rains, it typically pours. So, like I said, cloud storage with a twist, because I figure it's boring to sit here and tell you all about these cloud storage services like Dropbox or Google Drive or OneDrive, because, well, if you're listening to this show, chances are you probably already know something about them. Heck, you probably not only know about them, but you could possibly be using more than one of them. I certainly do. Let's be honest, these things are pretty simple to use. You sign up, set up, you maybe even set it up on multiple computers or devices, and then you put your stuff in there so you can pick it up on another computer, pick it up on the web, on your phone or tablet, at work, at a friend's house, whatever. You can even share a cloud storage service with friends so you can easily share digital stuff and so on. They're meant to be easy to set up and easy to use, and they're all basically doing the same things that I just mentioned, no matter if they're run by Google, Microsoft, or even on your own server with an open source solution like OwnCloud. But what I want to talk about goes a bit beyond those basic uses, because you can do more with your cloud storage than you might think. Indeed, with a little work and maybe an extra program, you could turn your cloud storage into a robust backup and archival system. And if you happen to be someone like me, someone who's into the web and does the occasional bit of teaching at the library, well, you can host a website right off of the service without ever needing to set up a web server. Sound interesting? Well, hey, then let's get started. Everybody knows you need to back up your stuff, just like everybody knows that you shouldn't eat junk food. Meanwhile, people still eat delicious, delicious ice cream, and they still don't back anything up. The thing is it's easy to do this kind of thing with a cloud service, and you can even work with the 3-2-1 philosophy of backing up your data. Now, for those who don't know, the 3-2-1 philosophy is that you should have three copies of your data in two different formats, and one of those copies should be off-site. I believe all cloud storages will allow you to select which folders you want to sync up. At least most of them do. The ones I do will. So you can designate folders with important goodies to save to the cloud. Me, I just typically save everything to a cloud service. My books that I've written, those are stored in a cloud drive. My podcast notes, those are stored in a cloud drive. Anything work and project related goes up to the cloud. I just save it there. The documents folder in Windows, OS X, and Linux, be damned. I don't care if that's the default folder to save documents. I save everything to the cloud. Now, keep in mind, saving stuff to a cloud drive does not take it off your computer. It's still on my laptop, and it's copied to the cloud. If it's a service like Google Drive or Dropbox, then it's not only saved to my laptop, it's also saved to the cloud, and also my work laptop, and my Linux box, and my Mac Mini. If you have more than one computer synced to that cloud storage service, then congratulations, you're pretty much halfway there towards a robust backup solution. So let's take a 1,000-foot view of this. I write these show notes, for instance, and I save them to OneDrive, which is the service I prefer, though I use Dropbox and Google Drive too. My OneDrive syncs to this laptop, and my Mac Mini, and my work computer. Well, there you go. That's three copies. It's on my laptop's SSD. It also happens to be on the hard drive of those other computers, and it's on a cloud drive. So there's actually three different formats, but definitely two different formats. By its very nature, OneDrive is off-site. So there's my one off-site copy. Great, right? But I take things a couple steps further, but they're baby steps. They're baby steps, and I encourage you to do the same. The first step is that anything sensitive gets encrypted. You can do this however you like. Me, I've been working with Veracrypt, a continuation of the TrueCrypt project, and I use that to encrypt my more sensitive stuff. I'll have a link in the show notes at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast so you can check that out. But if you're backing up sensitive stuff to the cloud and other computers, I really suggest you encrypt it. And if you're not backing up sensitive stuff, then why not? That's kind of what backups are for. The second step is a little bit of work, but it's quick and easy work, I promise. There's an app out there called BitTorrent Sync. It's free. And it's totally cross-platform. BitTorrent Sync uses the same technology as BitTorrent, but on a more private basis. So here's the deal. When you install BitTorrent Sync, you can point it to folders that you'd want to copy or backup across a network or over the net. When you've got that done, you get a key from BitTorrent Sync that you set up on another computer running BitTorrent Sync. That could be your own computer, it could be a friend's computer, a family computer, whatever. Moreover, you can do this with multiple computers. You can sync that folder to three or four different computers. And the nice thing about this is the more computers that you have with the data on it, the quicker it is for everything to sync up because it uses this BitTorrent technology to pull data from multiple sources rather than just one. So BitTorrent Sync works independently of any cloud storage solution, but here's the interesting bit. You can use it to sync folders already being synced by cloud storage services. So you could tell BitTorrent Sync to look at your entire OneDrive folder and copy that to your friend's computer so they can store an external, they can store that external backup on a hard drive someplace if they wish. So anytime you save something to your Google Drive folder, your Dropbox folder, your OneDrive folder, or any other folder that BitTorrent Sync is looking at, it gets copied to other computers in your syncing network. Even if your friend doesn't use a cloud storage service at all, or they just don't use the one that you use, they'll still get the copy, and there's another off-site copy. This works particularly well for me because I back up to an off-site Linux box. Now, for all their friendliness on Windows and OS X, only Dropbox offers the high-end syncing capabilities on Linux. OneDrive and Google Drive are really lagging behind here. It's kind of sad. That's not to say it's impossible to use OneDrive or Google Drive on Linux. but you know, it's just not as seamless as Dropbox. Dropbox, you can go get an installer, you can pop it on there, a little bit of tweaking, a little bit of signing up, and it works. Meanwhile, BitTorrent Sync works fine on Linux, and it doesn't matter that I prefer OneDrive. All BitTorrent Sync sees is a folder, and it's going to send that folder to other computers, one of which is that Linux box. So with a slight workflow change and only a marginal amount of work, you could start backing up your precious, beautiful data today. And I really suggest you get on that. You'll thank yourself later because hard drives die. They just do. I have lost probably 4 external hard drives in the last 8 or 9 years. They just stop working. So you'll thank yourself later when that hard drive dies, or you find yourself in need of that document, but you only have access to a public computer. You don't have your computer in front of me, and you don't have your computer in front of you, rather. And you realize that I need that thing. Oh, but that thing is in my cloud storage service. I backed it up there. Well, can I borrow your computer for just a second so I log into a website and get that thing? There you go. You're not only saving your stuff to the cloud where you can get to it from anywhere, but you can use this and BitTorrent Sync as a robust backup solution. To a bunch of librarians about various web things, since web things and libraries is kind of the thing I do. So we've talked about everything from customizing their website to teaching classes on making a website. As it happens, sometimes customizing a library's website is actually easier than teaching a class on how to make a website. Because after all, when you're teaching HTML to the public or to staff, you need to set up a place where they can write, modify, and publish their code. That means setting up a web server somewhere, and God knows you need to make sure that they don't screw something up, and that means a completely separate server from the library stuff, and hey, did you know you can host simple websites on Dropbox? Check the show notes at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast, and you'll find a link to a quick website that I threw together and hosted in my Dropbox. Now, you can't do server-side stuff like PHP or anything. You can roll out some JavaScript since that's processed by the browser, not the server. In a way, this allows you to do so many things with classes or maker events or coding events or whatever. If you're starting out with a class on making websites, then consider what you could do with a simple Dropbox account shared among a laptop lab or on a few computers in a computer lab. You'd be able to teach some basic HTML, and you'd need nothing more complicated than a text editor to write the code. After you show folks the ropes with some HTML, maybe you'd like to show them a little bit more, maybe how they can make that new website look cool with some CSS. You can do that. You can do inline CSS or linked style sheets. Or maybe you'd like to show them how to enhance some functionality on the website with JavaScript. Well, you can do that too. JavaScript's processed by the browser, as I said. So that's not a problem. You can do JavaScript in a Dropbox. Now, I don't want to sound like I'm shilling for Dropbox here. I'm not. I'm really not. The real reason I'm talking about it so much in this segment is simple. You can't do this with Google Drive or OneDrive. They just don't support it. If you drop an HTML file into Google Drive or OneDrive and try accessing it from a public link, it just comes up as the code. You're just looking at the code because both services assume that you just want to see the file. They don't render it for you in the browser. Dropbox actually does. So when you've been in my shoes and you want to teach a class on making websites and how the web works, one of the biggest hurdles is creating a sandbox for your students to play in that won't mess up anything anywhere else. Just for giggles, I hunted down a free website template that included things like linked style sheets, responsive design, JavaScript, images, even a jQuery-powered slider. And I dropped that into a public folder on Dropbox. I just wanted to see if it would work. After all, you've got a jQuery thing. You've got some JavaScript. You've got more robust design. And granted, it was just a free template. I just found one that I liked, downloaded it, unzipped it, dropped it in. That's it. Well, it worked flawlessly. You should check the show notes for that too at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. I'll have a couple links there for the simple site and for the more complex site that you can kind of see what you can do with it. And keep in mind, look at the URL. They're in my public Dropbox folder and their websites. Beyond teaching classes, you can use it collaboratively with staff for custom pages, custom work for events, anything like that. Like I said, you're not going to host a WordPress site there. You're not going to be executing C# code in ASP.NET. But that's not what it's for, folks. If you're setting up a site with a CMS or running ASP, then you really need a server, not Dropbox. So play with this if you have the interest. After all, you can get a couple gigs of Dropbox for free, and that's more than enough for your average classroom of a few students. Set up folders for each student with the same content and code in each one, and have them open it up and they can see how this code works. They can start modifying the code. And since they'd all be playing in their own folders, their own environments, they can see this on the screen. They can just start, you know, modifying this. Hit F5, see what breaks. Let's modify that. Hit F5, see if that fixes it. Things like that. And with a more robust site like I've got linked in the show notes, you can start getting into the JavaScript stuff. You can call jQuery. It's actually kind of fascinating that Dropbox offers this as a service because, like I said, it's a simple website, but you can run some pretty complex websites too. So play with it. Give it a shot. Set up some folders and let some students or staff just go nuts and see what they can learn about how the web actually works. So that about wraps up another episode of Cyberpunk Librarian. I thank you for tuning in and encourage you that if you do nothing else from the show, take a look at using a cloud storage service for that backup solution that you obviously need if you're not doing any backup at all. Things happen, folks. Hard drives die, and you shouldn't have to suffer too badly for a mechanical error. Back that stuff up, and that way it's there when you need to replace it. Song you're currently digging on is White Mountains by ATW. Earlier in the show, you heard Long Night by Jose and Parallax Breaks' Sweet Landscape Art Project in Tarobang remix by the Tunguska Electronic Music Society. Now, there is a mouthful, ladies and gentlemen. As always, the opening track is Belly Dance at Ibisu by Ryo Miyoshita, and you can pick all of those up in the show notes at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast, where I've got links to some other stuff like Veracrypt, BitTorrent Sync, and those two sites that I talked about on Dropbox. Check those out. You might be surprised with what you can do with a simple cloud hosting solution. Cyberpunk Librarian is hosted by the Archive, Internet Archive at archive.org. They've got some great people doing great things over there, folks, and I really suggest you check out not only some other podcasts that are available over there, but go play yourself some video games. It's just the thing you need in the middle of a long, grueling day. Maybe take a little time for yourself during lunch and fire up a video game, a good classic game from the good old days. And you can do that right there on the Internet Archive at archive.org. Keep in mind that coming up in May from the Cyberpunk Librarian Podcasting Network will be a brand new show, Intergalactic Librarian, The Adventures of Skylar and Jessica, High Adventure in Deep Space with Librarians. The first episode should be out in early May. And also coming this summer, the return of the show that got me into podcasting in the first place. We're going to explore the strange connections between historical events and how one thing weirdly leads to another thing and how everything is so strangely interconnected. That's hyperlinked history right here on the Cyberpunk Librarian Podcasting Network. But for now, I am going to get out of here. I will see you again in 2 weeks for another episode of Cyberpunk Librarian. Thank you so much for tuning into this one. So take care and remember, you don't have to be high tech to be low budget, but it certainly helps if you're a cyberpunk. See you next time.